So I'm Jibu, and good afternoon. In this presentation, I'll introduce a new approach to scale social network, and in particular, it's used to scale the feed-following applications. And unlike the popular NoSQL approach, our method is actually consistent. Here's the brief outline of the presentation. I'll start by giving the problem statement. So what is feed-following? Feed-following is an abstraction of an important type of social network functions. Example of this feed-following are like Twitter's timeline application, and there are many others. So a feed-following layers on top of a following network with large number of users. Some of those are called producers. So they produce these events, like they send tweets or they post images. Other users in the network are the consumers. These are the nosy people who follow others and wants to know what's going on. So they send a feed-following request. This feed-following request basically asks the server, give me the most recent event items produced by all the producers I follow. I don't care about the others, but I care about all the producers I follow. So in a social network, most users are actually both consumers and producers. So this really simple feed-following query, it's fairly simple and straightforward, but turns out to be surprisingly difficult to scale. We'll see why. First, each of this feed-following query is individualized. The query is all about events produced by the producers this particular consumer follows, which means the query results cannot be reused by the other users. Also, since we don't know in advance who follows whom, so we cannot partition the database in advance accordingly, which means each of the feed-following queries are depending on the global state of the whole database. And the queries might have to be cross-partition queries, which is very difficult. Because of all this, the traditional scalability tools such as partitioning, replication, and caching, they become much less effective in the feed-following problem. So there's a relatively recent approach to scale social network, the NoSQL approach. We know that NoSQL will shard the database and do partial replications, but the feed-following queries on top of a NoSQL approach, it lacks the consistency guarantee. So what does consistency really mean here? In this context, a consistency guarantees a distributed system will act as if it was a single node system. So on a single node system, things happen in order, and all the clients will see the things happen in the same order. But on a NoSQL system, this type of things could happen. So they see things in different orders. But why is the order here important? Because without the consistency guarantee, a social network might display quite odd behaviors. And one such example is the so-called retweet anomaly. So in this simple following network, B is both a producer and a consumer. So first, it does a feed-following request and gets a tweet from A. Then B thinks this is a really nice post. I want all my followers to know that. So he retweeted it. Now look at C. C is following both the original retweeter. So what should C see is both the original tweet and the retweet. But if the system does not guarantee one copy serializability or consistency, then this type of things could happen. C would see the retweet, but not the original tweet. This is, at a certain time, this could happen. Then sometime later, the retweet might, the original tweet might appear again. So this is, raises lots of confusions. People would be asking, what happened to the original tweet? Was it censored? Or does A voluntarily retract the tweet? But when it reappeared, it just is not, it's just counterintuitive. So in this type of retweet anomaly exposes the inconsistency of the system. So we certainly are interested in achieving the scalability without having to sacrifice the consistency. So here we present a new approach. The gist of this new approach is ask a different question. The client used to ask, give me the 20 most recent tweets that sent by all the producers I follow. Now the question the client asks would be, who have created new tweets during the past scheduled release period? So this similarly very simple change, it has incorporated a number of paradigm shifts. Those paradigm shifts include client-side processing, the use of global time, and the scheduled release algorithms. The end result of all this is a totally different trade-off from the NoSQL approach. We now do not trade, we don't trade consistency for scalability anymore. We now trade freshness for scalability. I explain this bit by bit. I'm sure everyone knows what cap theorem is about. And NoSQL is, this approach is based on the cap theorem, which basically says out of the three good things, you can only have two. So let's sacrifice consistency. But if you look at a paper that actually provide a proof for the cap theorem, what it says is this whole theorem is strictly preconditioned on the so-called asynchronous network model. What this model is, says is the only way to coordinate the distributed node is to pass messages. But practical distributed system may have much more tools than that. One of the tools I said is global time. In particular, each node in a distributed system may be able to synchronize its local time to an authoritative time source. And it's not too far off to assume that a distributed system might be able to achieve a certain degree of approximation of a global time. Why is that important? Because with global time, the system becomes much easier to synchronize. Actually, the second half of the CAP theorem paper, it basically says with the global time, the CAP may indeed be simultaneously achievable most of the time. That's the second half of the proof. So, so global time is important in the way that, Leslie Lamport has pointed out many years ago, if there exists any causality between two events, then the cause, in terms of physical time dimension, the cause must happen before the consequence. There's no argument about that. This is just physics. So if we can timestamp the original tweets and the retweets with a physical time, then certainly the original tweets will always happen before the retweets. So there's no confusion about consistency there. We indeed give a simple proof in the paper that using our approach, the system is automatically consistent. With global time in hand, we now can construct a new method to coordinate feed following in a partition database. We call this the scheduled release method. And in this method, all partition of a distributed system share the same release schedule. The same release schedule is defined in global time. For example, every 5 seconds from the start of the day. So every 5 seconds, the newly committed updates will be released only by the end of the schedule. Let's take a look at this example. Look at the update 2. The update 2 starts after TI, but committed before TI plus 1. And also look at the query 1. Query 1 starts after update 2 is committed. Normally, in a normal database, query 1 would be able to see the committed results of the update 2. But in our schedule, no, you're not able to see it. It can only see it after TI plus 1. So it needs a schedule defined in global time for the committed updates to be visible to all the queries. So assuming we have the global time, then the time map query, which was give me the all the users that has tweeted in the past scheduled release period. This is also called the time map query. The time map query may be able to execute it separately on their separate partition database. And by combining these results, the total results would be equals to execute the same query on an unpartitioned database. So here's an example. We just do a very naive partition of the database so that user number 0, 5, 10, 15 will always commit to partition 0 and so on. So for any new tweets or updates, this is what it's been doing, and it will just commit as usual. But for a time map request, the user will contact all the partitions and get all the user numbers allocated to different partitions. And the user will combine the results and get all the users that has been tweeted during the past scheduled release the period. And then it's up to the users. And now it's up to the users to figure out which of this newly tweets is relevant. And if it's relevant, they will get this new tweets one after another. So here's a very simple example. If the current time is 105:37 and we're defining the scheduled release period in every 5 seconds, then your scheduled release time would be from 105:30 to 105:35. So give me all the user numbers who have sent new tweets from 105:30 to 105:35. I, as a client, will figure out by myself if any of these new tweets are relevant to me. If they are relevant, I retrieve these tweets separately by myself. So this is from user A. What happened for user B? If user B doing the same request in 105:39, that is 2 seconds after that, B actually essentially asked the same question. Because they asked the same question, the answer is the same, so we can cache. However, in our approach, there's also a trade-off. Remember, all our questions was asked against the scheduled release period. So all your question answered is only accurate as of the start of the scheduled release period. That's about 5 seconds before. So you have latency there. So does latency actually matters? We think it doesn't if the latency isn't too high. And here's why. There's always a confusion between latency, between staleness and the latency. I'll give you two examples. Someone asks a question at 1 o'clock, how are you? The implied question is, how are you at this moment? The guy answered back at 2 o'clock, 1 hour later, saying, I'm fine. I'm fine as of 2 o'clock. So this this question and answer responses has fresh answers, but it has 1 hour latency in there. This is the very unresponsive web applications we don't want to build. So let's change the way of asking questions. Now at 1 o'clock, we ask, how were you at 12:55? That's 5 minutes earlier. We're asking you this date that's already happened. So for any web location who has kept a good track record of what's happening, answering this question would be much easier than asking the previous question. So assuming it will be able to be answered in 5 minutes, then the system will come back at 1:05 saying, I'm fine. I'm fine at 12:55. So now we have 10 minutes stillness, but we have only 5 minutes latency. So the second system is much more responsive, although it carries a little bit stale answers. And we think this is, should be much preferred than previous one. And this is the type of trade-off we are promoting in this approach. So now we explain why freshness may be traded for scalability. We draw an analogy between this trade-off and the mass transit system. For example, we're using the subways. If you're using a subway, you must time your travel with the published schedule of the subway, right? And because of using a subway, you cannot go anywhere. You can only go to the vicinity of the metro lines that has a stop. And if there are changes between the subway lines, you must make changes by yourself. So there's much less flexibility of using a mass transit system. But at the same time, you gain overall efficiency by lots of people sharing the same resources. And this is pretty much the same arguments we make in this approach. While we're trading freshness, we're sharing the results. We're sharing the cached results produced by the system before. So we now present the experiment used to evaluate our method. The experiment was done on Amazon Cloud. And we implemented a Twitter-like feed-following application. The server side was implemented with Python, Django, and Postgres SQL. The schedule release also used the triggers and the PGs SQL. At the time of the experiment, our Amazon account only allows up to 100 instances running at the same time, which limits our ability to simulate the client-side load. That's why we eventually decided we're not going to do a real browser type of experiment. We're just using emulated browser. We program a server using Python, Django, and Postgres, use this to simulate multiple browsers at the same time. This is the experiment configurations. Most of the instances are used to emulate the browser load. We only used up from 3 to 6 medium size instance, Amazon instance as the servers. And we heavily used the memcached to simulate the web caches. And on top of that, we also do load balancing and put the HTTP perf to do the benchmarking. So to better evaluate our implementation, we must generate more realistic social network workloads. We basically followed the example from a Yahoo Peanuts-based feed-following experiments and use almost the same zip font parameters and generate very similar synthetic workload. We generate the workload with a Yahoo Cloud serving benchmark. And here's the parameters we used in the experiments. It's more or less similar with the Yahoo experiments. It has about 200,000 users. And we created an update load about 19 new tweets per second, and then we gradually drive up the update loads. And here is the scalability observed by this system. And basically, with the server from number 3 to 6, we observe the linear scalability. With the maximum number of server here, which is 6, we recorded a peak timeline query rate at about 120 requests per second, which is about 10 million queries per day. And our maximum staleness is about 5 seconds. This is the latency load relations under the different server configurations. This slide shows the cache hits and cache miss observed at Memcached server, which is used to simulate the web caches. We observe extremely high cache hits rate, sometimes about several thousands to one. That red line under there, those are the cache misses, and the green line out there, those are cache hits. This means most of the queries in the systems never reaches the server. It's all been resolved by the caches. Also, the change of the cache hits rates, they correspond nicely with our scheduled release period. So think about it, the cache hits should arise within the time release period, and it should drop when the new data is released at the beginning of the intervals. So you see that type of drop. Those are corresponding to the scheduled release. And this slide shows the CPU load at a typical server and a typical emulated browser. We can see that when the query load increases, the CPU load increases more on the client side than the server side, which means if you increase the loads, more of the loads has been offloaded to the clients than on the server. And we believe this is the source of the favorable scalability properties in display in this experiment. So to summarize, in this presentation, we have described the implementation and evaluation of a new method that can simultaneously achieve scalability and consistency. In our experiments, the servers scales linearly and sustained sufficiently high load to be of practical use for small to medium-sized social network. The cost of running 6 low-end servers was fairly reasonable. It's about $1.20 per hour, and we think this is fairly reasonable for the performance it delivers. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Okay, again, we have about 5 minutes for questions. James?
Howdy. So at a sort of philosophical level, you're saying that you want to trade off freshness. That's the thing that you're willing to sort of let go. Whereas some other systems trade off consistency.
Yes.
Right. So I guess I'm wondering, at a philosophical level, why do you think that's the right trade-off to make? I mean, because it seems like people on Facebook or on Twitter, sort of empirically speaking, they've kind of come to get used to this world where things may be sort of temporarily inconsistent, but eventually this stuff ends up fixing itself. And so I'm wondering if, you know, particularly in social networks, let's say Twitter, where maybe you actually do want to value freshness. Maybe, you know, if there's some breaking news event, you want a bunch of stuff to come out very quickly, and it's going to be madness anyway because people will be saying different things. So maybe there you do actually want to bias in terms of freshness.
I haven't done further experiments, but at this experiment, the staleness is only 5 seconds. That's probably quite acceptable for most of the applications. We can potentially reduce that staleness to 2 seconds or 1 second. My gut tell me it probably won't make a big difference in performance. I think the performance is gained by reusing the caches, and this doesn't really affect how much freshness you are giving up. So I guess giving up a little bit freshness, you can gain a lot. If that is the case, this is probably quite a good trade-off. And also, as I described, the retweet anomaly, those are really counterintuitive, and people can actually notice those. So if you can avoid that, that probably would be better.
All right, I had one more question. So how exactly are you defining client, like in your experiments? Would a client be, let's say, someone with a mobile phone or someone? So that's how you define a client?
Yes, anything with a browser in that, yes.
And so what is the expected load per client?
I actually haven't done that part of the experiments, but what the clients actually did here is fairly simple. Mm-hmm. It practically just parse all the user IDs and figure out which of the user IDs is relevant to it and retrieve the first 20 tweets one after another. I think that's kind of a fairly reasonable load for a browser. Most of the browsers did much more than this, I believe.
Yeah, I guess the reason why I'm wondering is if you, particularly like on a mobile phone, if you're actually asking each client to sample through the whole volume of tweets or whatever that have been released in a particular epoch, that may be a very heavyweight task for a mobile device or something like that.
I actually think the processing power isn't the issue here. Probably, I think the issue is the bandwidth. Because the mobile network, the latency and bandwidth is pretty low. So what I'm thinking about this is there's another way to do things like this, is to use what I have here as an emulated browser as an edge server. So the mobile clients can just use this edge server as the end server to process this load. So the mobile devices does not have to do this. So the loads are all offloaded to the edge servers. But we can still take advantage of the whole property of this system.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Who's the next speaker? I got one question for you.
Yes.
So knowing what we know now about Twitter and, to some extent, Facebook, that the vast majority of the tweets come from a very tiny population, right? And I don't remember what the distribution exactly is, but it's much worse than like 80-20. It's something like 5-95. With that kind of information, would you change your approach?
Actually, it doesn't. No matter how frequent that tweet has been accessed, as long as it's been cached, it can be reused. So it stays in cache and it can be reused for whatever times you want. Those type of information is useful in NoSQL systems, which I described in the Yahoo method. They actually make active usage of the so-called fan-out and the fan-in ratio. If the fan-out ratio is pretty high, they want to cache this. If it's pretty low, it's probably not worth caching it. So this is their approach. In my approach, everything is cached. If it can be reused, it's great. If it doesn't, with a limited size of cache, those less used will be kicked out soon.
Will be put out, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Zizu.
Thank you very much.